Hello and welcome to Banfield. This week, ESPN blew the whistle on a dirty little secret. Make that another little secret in the NFL. The key word this time, however, dirty. The Sportsnet revealed that in May of 2016, almost 6 years ago, the Dallas Cowboys paid four of the team's iconic cheerleaders $2.4 million to settle a lawsuit. The four cheerleaders alleged that a Cowboys senior vice president, a man named Rich Dalrymple, slipped into their locker room while they were changing and recorded them on his cell phone. The team investigated, scoured his phone, and Dalrymple denied any peeping. But they paid out anyway. And in exchange for the money, they required the women sign NDAs, non-disclosure agreements. A Cowboys spokesman said everyone involved felt just terrible about this unfortunate incident. But life went on until ESPN started asking questions, at which point Dalrymple, who'd been with the team for 32 years, decided to retire. That was 16 days ago. He says the timing was purely coincidental. The Cowboys are not talking about Dalrymple or anything else. ESPN says, quote, no one on behalf of the team acknowledged his years of service and his retirement was not mentioned on the team's website. Are you shocked yet by any of this? Because my guests tonight are not in the least. I want you to meet three women who left their blood, sweat, and tears on the NFL sidelines all across the country. Megan Pravdin cheered for the Tampa Bay Bucks and the Orlando Magic. Before that, in 2014, she tried to be a Dallas Cowboys cheerleader, but was told she danced too, quote, heavily, and her thighs were, quote, too stocky. Kristan Ware cheered for the Miami Dolphins, but says she was mocked, abused, and ostracized after talking about her Christian faith and revealing that she was a virgin. Makeba Pate cheered for the Seattle Seahawks and now hosts the pro cheerleading podcast, The Truth Behind the Palms. She also happens to be a lawyer. Welcome to all three of you. Kristan, I want to begin with you. I said that the three of you just would not be surprised at all by the story I laid out. Why is that?
You know, my heart goes out to these women, and unfortunately, I'm not surprised by this at all. The NFL continues to cover up their wrongdoings with dirty hush money, and the amount of NDAs that they are giving out is completely out of control, and I believe it is a tactic to continue to silence women in the NFL.
So, Megan, the story about the alleged peeping in the Dallas Cowboys locker room, that happened a year after your ill-fated tryout for the Cowboys, in which they, you know, critiqued your physique and said, no, sorry, you don't belong here. Are you sorry still that you didn't make the team?
I mean, the reality is, Ashley, whether I made the Cowboys or another team, these are deep spread systemic issues with the NFL. And like to Kristan's point, they're paying, they're covering it up. And there's so many NDAs. No one's able to really speak about the true issues and the misogyny that's happening in the NFL right now.
So, Makeba, you've got the soapbox, you've got the podcast, you've got, you know, a wonderful platform to open this up and let people know exactly what's going on in these organizations. Is that making a lick of difference, though?
I think it is. The podcast started 3 years ago, and just having this community feel safe to raise these issues and really just talk about what it's really like to be a professional cheerleader, either in the NFL, NBA, or other leagues. I think once you understand that we're all a community and some of these issues are happening in various teams, I think gives a little bit of comfort, because prior to these lawsuits, I think there was just a fear of speaking up and explaining what was going on in your program. And now that I think there's a broader community, people are more inclined to figure out ways of how we can fight this. I think everybody's tired of this narrative repeating itself over and over again.
So, Megan, you know, going in, I'm wondering if you realized that you'd be judged like livestock. I mean, you'd literally be just scrutinized top to bottom. And so much of it would be just about looks as opposed to the athleticism and the drive and all the other things that it takes. I mean, this is a hard job. I've done a deep dive into a lot of what it takes to be a Dallas Cowboys cheerleader. I was one of the judges once. But did you expect just how, you know, superficial it would be?
You know, the Cowboys have a long history of being very critical on their reality show, DCC Making the Team, of the women's bodies. After my year on the team and after I shared my story on social media, a lot of the body shaming, while I don't believe it has been silenced to the girls, I believe that they, Kelly Finglass as an executive producer, is now having it edited out of the show due to social backlash. Mothers not wanting their children to see these types of criticisms on TV.
Yeah, I mean, I've got boys. I don't want boys to see it, let alone if I had daughters, you know. So, you know, I want to ask you, Kristan, about what you went through as a Christian, as somebody who disclosed, I would assume, to your what you thought was a pretty tight-knit community on the squad that you were a virgin. What happened then?
Well, I gave my life publicly to Christ, and I got baptized in Father, Son, Holy Spirit, and I posted it on my Twitter, and I was super excited. But then I found myself in an interview room with the director and the coaches bringing up my faith and also bringing up my personal conviction to save myself for marriage, and to which they said that I was not allowed to mention God on the team anymore and that I needed to develop into a real woman.
Words. I think most people would say those sound like legal fighting words. So you sued. Right. What happened after that?
Well, I contended for my faith, and I did go through the chain of command. I went to HR, and then retaliation began against me. I mean, I was gaslit to the ground. I was emotionally, mentally abused to the point where it turned physical, and the director laid her hands on me and yelled in my face and told me once again that I needed to develop into a woman. I did pursue a lawsuit with grace at the forefront of justice. I do like speaking in love and hope for a better tomorrow in the NFL for the girl that's going to be wearing the uniform after me. The lawsuit went on. They tried to offer me a settlement and hush money like they do all the other women. I refused it. I turned down the money. I did not sign an NDA because for me, telling my testimony is more important. And no amount of money was worth compromising and silencing what the Lord put in my heart. And I truly do want to leave a positive impact in the NFL. And I believe that if girls band together, we can actually accomplish this.
Is it true what I had read about you only wanted a sit down with Roger Goodell? You didn't want money. You didn't want anything else out of this suit, just an opportunity to speak face to face.
Thank you for bringing that up, Ashley. Yes, that was the first conversation that I had with my lawyer. And I said, listen, I will go forward and use my voice under one condition. This cannot be about money or fame. This has to be about making a difference. And so we tried to settle with the NFL by offering $1, $1 just to sit down with Roger Goodell and actually discuss important concerns and vital issues of mistreatment towards these women in the NFL. And he refused and declined.
So I want to move on to another story that seems to just keep, you know, cyclically making its way into the headlines, Makiba, and it's the Washington football team, at one time named the Redskins, now named the Commanders. And it's so odd. My team and I were discussing a calendar shoot in which some of the cheerleaders said that there were, you know, high-priced sponsors and luxury suite holders who were invited to tag along just to watch the topless, you know, these were supposed to be risque shots where they covered themselves up, but had to be topless and in some cases naked. And that there was this entourage that was invited to just tag along to these locations far and abroad. I mean, the Dominican Republic, Costa Rica, all these beautiful beaches. And it's weird because every 5 years, it seems this story happens in a different location with different people making the same claim. And I was even confused as to which incident we were talking about today. How much of this is well known throughout all of the cheerleading squads throughout the NFL?
I think we're all, you know, closely knit and impacted and following this space. I mean, this unfortunately dates back 20 years ago. This happened, something similar with the Philadelphia Eagles cheerleaders that were being spied on and by visiting teams in the NFL through their locker room. Just different cracks and holes and just spying on the cheerleaders. So this is definitely something that has recycled over and over again in the press. And I think the cheerleaders are aware of these types of things happening. And like you said earlier, it's not necessarily a surprise. because there really are no repercussions, there is really no justice that's served for, you know, the women that go through these horrific incidents. It's so violative. It's ridiculous.
So, okay. And I know that you guys weren't, you know, cheerleading for the Redskins or the Commanders, but since there is sort of the discussion mill, shall we say, about a lot of these incidents, issues, and treatments throughout every one of the squads, or at least many of the squads, there was more that I found so disturbing about these trips, especially the one that the New York Times wrote about in 2013 to Costa Rica with the Washington team. They weren't paid. They were their expenses were covered, but they weren't paid at all. They barely had a second to eat. Most of them would eat, you know, snacks in their hotel rooms because they couldn't have any time to go get a meal. And then some of them, five of them, told the New York Times that they were selected by some of those sponsors who tagged along on this trip and the luxury booth owners, selected to be escorts out at a nightclub in the evening. They were loaded onto a bus with no NFL presence or security, taken to a dark nightclub where there were NFL people and these sponsors. And then the bacchanalia, you know, continued. Their passports were taken away from them. The police approached them afterwards saying what was assumed to be, "Who are you?" And some of the NFL guys said they think you're hookers. And that was just the most deflating, horrendous moment for many of them. My jaw dropped. I couldn't believe it. Everything I've heard that's gone on with cheerleading squads, that I didn't. So I'd like to ask you, Megan, if that one is a shocker or if that's just a Saturday.
That was not my personal experience. However, I'm friends with a lot of people that have been a part of a lot of different teams. And sadly, that's not a shock. And sadly, these women feel that speaking out is actually inhibiting, you know, their experience. They're saying, "Well, but I'm so appreciative that I'm a part of this team." Well, that's great. But we have to speak up and we have to advocate for these women, or these working circumstances, these non-livable wages, all of those things are going to continue to happen. And I do want to say, I'm not sure if you also read up on the Buffalo Jills, but a lot of these NFL and NBA teams' solution to women who speak out blatantly about sexual abuse and misconduct, they just shut the team down, make it a co-ed team, cover them up. Let's make everyone in the organization more comfortable by punishing the women who are the victims. So that's really what I want to make sure that everyone understands about this. It's a vicious cycle, and the NDAs and all of that, it's continuing to silence all of us alumni who want better for the next generation of women.
So, Christiane, the organizations all answered and denied a lot of the charges, but the New York Times investigation ran pretty deep, and they got a lot of corroboration from different cheerleaders who said, no, we were hand-selected and told to go out on this these evening events. There were other things they said as well, and I want to get your feeling about this, Christiane. Team building events to keep the squad as a really tight unit, an outing on a boat. And when they got to the boat, it wasn't a commercial boat. It was one of the luxury booth owners' yachts. And the liquor flowed straight from the turkey basters into the cheerleaders' mouths. There were dance contests below deck in which the cheerleaders could make money. Many said it was demoralizing because they didn't feel they had any real choice. I mean, of course, it was voluntary, but you go because it's a team building event. And if you don't go, you're not a team player. So I sort of feel like, I can't imagine that in 2022 this is going on, but I assume that something maybe like it is, or if it's not exactly those scenarios that, you know, was written about in the New York Times, it's something similar. What do you, and especially with your Christian faith, that kind of a scenario has got to be just abhorrent.
Right. It's really disheartening because there is a dark, toxic culture in the NFL cheerleading world, and that is that these women are threatened and forced into intimidation and submission by saying, "Hey, you're here to be seen and not heard. And if you have a problem, with what we're asking of you, then you're easily replaceable, and all we need is a pretty face. And if you have at all a human heart, you say to yourself, well, I can only fight a broken system while I'm in a system. And if I do turn in my uniform and I do quit when it gets hard, they're just going to target another girl. And that's what's so hard, is that these women are terrified. I mean, we were scared just to admit that we needed a drink of water during practice. These women are going through very vigorous situations, and I, like you said, it does feel like we don't have a choice, and the only choice we have is to walk away, but then it's just going to happen to the next girl, and our backs are against the wall, but we are calling them out. It is ignorance at best to say that we need to ban cheerleaders. Cheerleaders are not the problem. The NFL and the corrupted system is the problem.
And Makiba, I know you were going to try to get a last comment in there. What was it?
Sure. I think even, you know, the instances that you're mentioning that happened on these trips, I think the worst of it all was just that the allegations that these women were secretly filmed doing these photo shoots, obviously while they were unclothed, and this was at the supposed request of Dan Snyder. I think that's probably one of the worst allegations that I can think of, because again, similar to what's happened with the DCC, they're being filmed without their knowledge. It's criminal behavior. I mean, let's be honest, this is actually something that violates the laws in Texas. It's something that should never happen in a workplace, a work setting. And so I wanted to definitely point that out, that I think the most egregious allegation is just that they were actually filmed and put into like a soft porn video, supposedly at the request of Dan Snyder. So that's,
I should mention Dan Snyder is the team's owner since 99. And he's yes. denied that, but boy, is that ever an uncomfortable revelation, accusation as well. All three of you, I'm so thankful that you joined me tonight to talk through this. I think it's definitely worthy of a lot more talk. We talked about race in the NFL a lot in the last few weeks, but sexism in the NFL maybe not getting as many headlines. So Megan Provden, Kristan Ware, and Makiba Pate, thank you so much.
Thank you, Ashley. Thanks for having us.
So my next guest knows these issues from every angle. Lisa Guerrero is a chief investigative reporter for Inside Edition. Her past careers include sportscaster, actor, model, and yes, cheerleader for the Los Angeles Rams. Lisa, thank you so much for joining me. You know, a lot of people watching, they hear these horror stories. They hear over and over that the cheerleaders, you know, don't get a penny or only get pennies. And they wonder, why would smart, talented, athletic, successful women even want to do this job?
Well, first of all, a lot of smart, talented, athletic women love football. And I was 19 years old when I tried out to be a Rams cheerleader. And I was raised by a single dad. I had a brother. And some of my fondest memories were growing up watching football with my dad and arguing about who should be the starting quarterback. In fact, when I was little, I thought that someday I was going to grow up to be the starting quarterback of the San Diego Chargers. I didn't realize when I was a kid that I couldn't be a player, but I could be a cheerleader. When I became a cheerleader, one of the big draws for me was a sense of sorority and community with other women. Again, I didn't have sisters. I didn't have a mom. And I saw being part of this team as being part of this group of women that were dancers, that were part of a team that loved sports, that loved our home team. At that point, it was the Rams who played in Anaheim. I grew up in Orange County. And I saw the opportunity of trying out in a couple of ways. Number one, as a model and an actor and a dancer, I thought it would be an opportunity to dance and to be something that would help build my craft as a dancer. And because we were close to Los Angeles, of course, I was auditioning. And I thought, you know, maybe this will also help my acting career. It will give me a platform. And I did, in fact, get an agent when I was a cheerleader. A lot of the women, though, try out because they're going to college. They understand it's not a full-time job. It's a hobby. It's a part-time job. And they think that at some point they're going to take this opportunity and potentially use this as a prospective business connections.
A springboard, I would think.
Most of the women,
yeah,
of course.
A springboard to something.
Of course, you
something
grow
else.
Up.
I can
you
see
get your
it.
College
yeah.
degree.
Except,
absolutely.
Boy, oh boy, I mean, it pays about as much as a hobby would. So it has to be particularly heartbreaking. I don't know if you went through any of the things that many of these women allege happened to them with cowboys, with the Redskins, but it has to be particularly heartbreaking when you hear five different women who were interviewed by the New York Times say things like they were dangled as sex objects, they were pimped out, that they were used as sex symbols to basically, you know, appease the highest bidders, the men who would, you know, pay for sponsorships and have luxury boxes. This was a big thank you. Here are our girls. That just must be heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking to me, and I wasn't a part of, you know, the industry.
It's outrageous. It's not just heartbreaking. It's infuriating. These young women are ambassadors for your community. They come, unlike the players who are drafted from a college and are from different communities, your cheerleaders for these teams, they come from your community. And long after they leave cheerleading, they stay in that community. They raise children. They raise family. They're part of your fan base. They are ambassadors for your franchise, and to be treated disrespectfully, to be abused, harassed, insulted is absolutely wrong. A couple of things. First of all, where are the directors when this is happening? I was also a former director. Once I cheered for the Rams, I was a director for the Falcons and the Patriots. So you've got to have a strong director that says, absolutely not. Not only
well, can I tell you
am
something?
I not going to...
I'm glad you asked that, Lisa, because when I read this this investigation into the Washington Redskins Costa Rica trip, where they, you know, they were trying to shield each other from the ogling sponsors that were asked to tag along, the director made a comment, and this is a quote from the Times. I'm not kidding. The female director of the Washington Redskins cheerleading squad, her name was, and I just got it right here. Hold on a second. It's I think it's important to know it because the comment that she made just sort of stood out like a sore thumb. Can't find it. I'll find it in a second. But what she said, Jojokian, if that sounds right, Stephanie Jojokian, she said to the Times, quote, no sponsor is worth these children's safety and well-being at all. These children, these were and I, you know, I guess last quick comment, Lisa, but to be referred to in a New York Times interview as a group of children, does that kind of sum it all up?
Yes, they're infantilizing these women. These are women that are 18 and over. They're dancers. They're athletes. And to be treated like that is outrageous. But again, the director, it's the director, of course, who needs to, over my dead body, would I have let any of the cheerleaders I work with be treated like that. But more importantly, where are the owners? Where's the transparency? Why are you covering up for your vice president who's oogling, sneaking into the Dallas Cowboy cheerleader locker room and allegedly videotaping them? Why wasn't he fired? There have got to be some owners in the league that say enough is enough. It's time to stop these outrageous acts to protect the cheerleaders, to provide security for them, to pay them a living wage for the amount of time they're working for your team with their team's uniform on. These are billion-dollar companies. And again, this isn't about Roger Goodell, the commissioner. He's just the spokesperson for these billionaires who have these teams like franchises. It's up to the team owners, who are mainly old white men, to say enough is enough. And if they can't do it, the fans, they need to push this. They need to push this narrative.
What,
enough is enough.
Good luck, right? Good luck. I'm just going to put up a picture as we say goodbye. And it's from the 60s. And it's the template for the Dallas Cowboys cheerleader image and costume. It was an exotic dancer named Bubbles Cash. And the owner of the team, the president, I guess, the Tech Schramm, saw her in the stands walking down with a very revealing miniskirt and, you know, sky-high hair, but two things of cotton candy. And at the time, the cheerleaders on the field were high schoolers that did stunts. And he saw Bubbles Cash, and look how everyone else saw her. Just look at everybody else's faces in that crowd. And he said, okay, I think it's time to change our cheerleaders from high school kids doing stunts to maybe something a little more Bubbles Cash. Now, that was within my lifetime anyway, in the 60s. And who knows if it's, you know, going to get better soon. You know, it's great talking to you, Lisa. Thanks so much for coming on. I really appreciate this.
Thanks for having all of us on, Ashley, because I really enjoyed that first segment. It was so enlightening. Those women were powerful and intelligent, and they told their stories really well. And thank you for helping to further the conversation. It's an important one.
Well, you know, we got the vote, so there's still hope. Thanks, Lisa.
Thanks, Ashley.
Okay, coming up after the break, the brand new technology that has leaders around the world petrified. It is not a rigged voting machine or a fancy new weapon. It is something we all have at our own disposal. Deepfakes, a program that lets you make anyone you choose do anything you want. Tonight, I've challenged some deepfake experts to try to create an ultra-realistic version of me doing the news, to see if you can spot the difference. Find out how they did after the break. Or are you maybe watching some deep fakery right now? No. And then also thousands of free luxury cars just sitting there unattended, and it is not illegal to take them. I'm not kidding. When I say cars, I mean Porsches and Lamborghinis and Audis and Bentleys. Keys still in them. All you need are some very special skills and a lot of guts. Going to tell you where they are and the tools that you need to drive one away. Ahead. Deep fake videos. Just think about the implications, from the security of your bank account to the American democracy itself. So far, deep fakes have mostly been entertaining, like Hollywood resurrecting dead actors, TikTok stars impersonating celebrities. But cyber spies have used them, too, to make world leaders say and do anything they want. So how can anyone be sure that what we're seeing and hearing is actually what we should be seeing and hearing? I'm joined by two people who know more about deepfakes than anyone. Hao Li is a pioneer in the deepfake industry. He's a computer scientist, innovator, and entrepreneur. He's the founder and CEO of Pinscreen Inc. and is a distinguished fellow at the University of California at Berkeley. And Jesse Richards is a visual effects artist who has worked with celebrities like Will Smith, Tom Brady, Alicia Keys, and Pink. And you've probably seen his very popular deepfake videos on TikTok. He also made the deep fake of me that we just showed you before the break. Welcome to both of you. How I want to begin with you. You know, witnessing is like the foundation of our democracy and our justice system. And now I don't even know if witnessing is going to be, you know, fair anymore or trustworthy anymore. How can we tell if something is a deep fake?
Yeah, I think, first of all, we have to always assume that the technology is there, right? So it means that you can't really trust any video that you can see, right? And there are a couple of clues that you can use. For example, if you see something that's very blurry, and if something doesn't look right, especially around the mouth and around the eyes, those are obvious signs that it's something that it's done poorly using a deepfake. But one thing that's important is that with a little bit of work, production work, and also by tweaking the algorithm, it's actually possible to create deepfakes that are, you know, perfect.
So, I mean, I'm looking at the deepfake of myself on the screen, and obviously our hair is a little bit different and maybe my forehead a little different. But other than that, it's pretty darn hard to tell, Jesse. How hard was it to make this and how long did it take?
So I've been doing this for about 2.5 years now. So doing something like this takes about 4 to 5 hours of masking and editing. But then I let the program run from anywhere from one day to like 2 weeks. But this clip in particular took 2 days to make.
So how a lot of people, you know, are like Jesse, they're very forthright about their deep faking. I mean, his TikTok is awesome. It's super entertaining and everybody goes there because that's what they want to see. They know what they're seeing, and it's a spectacle. It's lovely. There are a lot of people who may not say a word about it, and it is sinister. And that's what I think most of us are really concerned about. I think I read somewhere that we have likely all seen a deep fake already and not even known it. Is that really true?
That's hard to answer, right? I mean, if you've seen, heard about the famous Tom Cruise video, you know, a lot of them actually went viral. There's a lot of, you know, if you ask me where deepfakes have been mostly used, They've been mostly used in pornography, right? So unconsensual, non-consensual porn content is actually where they're widely spread, unfortunately.
Yeah, this is one of the deepfakes you were talking about, the Tom Cruise video. It's nearly impossible to detect this one because the person who's doing it is an impersonator, so he already has the voice down pat, the mannerisms. Then it's just a matter of getting the face supplanted, and it's, like I said, it is one of the best things that I've seen on the internet. So, Jesse, what about detection technology? If my own eyes aren't good enough, Jesse, is there some kind of machine out there that's going to do the job for me?
There isn't much out there yet to scan and detect a deep fake, but I honestly would say the human eyes are the best detectors. Like, the human eye subconsciously knows what a face looks like and how they move. Even the best deep fakes aren't really perfect yet. There are some subtleties and movements that deep fakes can't replicate yet, but I would say people who do make deep fakes are the best people to detect what is a deep fake and what is real.
Well, that's not me, that's for sure. Okay, Hal, last question, and this is an important one. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Maybe I can add something. In the research community, we're also actively working on deepfake detection. So in the past year, there has been actually a lot of advancement in there. So deepfakes, for instance, that specifically focus on lip synchronization with what they're actually saying are one of the most effective methods actually in detecting deepfakes.
Well, that makes me feel better that at least there's something that's in the works. Thank you to both of you, Hal Lee and Jesse Richards. It's such a fascinating science. And thanks for making that one, too. It was really enjoyable and entertaining, to say the least, and super creepy. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Still
so much
to come. You do a lot of training for an 80-mile bike race, but nothing can prepare you for this. We're going to show you who won this contest in just a moment. And then also, what would you do for a free Lamborghini, a free Porsche, or a Bentley? We're going to show you exactly where thousands of these cars are sitting unattended right now, and it is not illegal to take them. You just need to know the level of risk and adventure involved. And it's a lot. Monday on Morning in America, our tour of life on the U.S.-Mexico border continues. Our exclusive border report, Communities in Crisis, only on News Nation. It has been a long week, everybody, but before we send you off into your weekend, a few notes from the person who keeps our show under control, senior story editor Paula Frelick, who is live now, literally out of control. I'd love to say like control room A or B, but I don't think we have letter names for our control rooms anyway. So here we are again. Paula. Let's start with the off-road bike race in California. It was not supposed to include math or obstacles.
Okay. First of all, this was an 80-mile off-road race. It was not, it's not an easy thing to do. You got to train pretty hard for it, but I am pretty darn sure that nobody trained for this. You got to check it out. Oh my gosh.
We missed our window. It's moving.
Oh! Oh, hey! Oh, no! Hey! Oh my God.
Okay, that is so not cool. Is he okay?
Oh boy. I mean, okay, first of all, we all know if you mess with the bull, and also, by the way, if the bull messes with you, you're going to get the horns. Four people were attacked, and thankfully, they are all okay. But wow. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, that my Lord.
And for me.
And the commentary from the camera, first of all, I can't believe the cyclist just kind of kept going. Like, there's a bull there. I would have maybe gone under the grass, but... Ooh, that is, and then just imagine you're out there, like it's like a real bull riding ring. That is so scary. Okay, let me move on to Trentham, the monkey forest just south of Liverpool in England. In the animal kingdom, it is just expected that procreation is a natural occurrence. So what is going on with the monkeys there?
Okay, so these Barbary macaques were just not in the mood. And here's the problem. They are endangered animals, and there's only about 8,000 to 10,000 left in the entire world. So the zoo was like, come on, we need more of you. But they weren't having it. So you know what? They tried to put them in the mood. They hired a Marvin Gaye impersonator who crooned to them. And you got to look at this. It's truly, truly stunning.
That is absolutely crazy. Did it actually work?
Okay, first of all, I mean, how could Let's Get It On not work? But they did say that the monkeys started chattering and clamoring their teeth and then grooming each other, which I think a simian speak for, yes, it did. However, we are not going
That's
to find
crazy.
Out for sure until the spring.
Well, of course, I should have expected nothing less. Okay, then there's this one. Whenever we say planes, trains, and automobiles, we don't actually think that they should mix, but a guy in Lake Worth, Florida did not get the memo.
No, he did not. This is like my worst nightmare. So here he is. It's pre-dawn. It's dark out. And he sees a train go by. And despite the fact that the gates are down, the lights are a-flashing. The guy's like, oh, okay, I got to go. Maybe he was in a big hurry. And oh my gosh, check out what happened next.
Yikes. What did happen? Okay, you can only see the train view. What happened to the car view?
You are not kidding. Oh my gosh. Well, the train split the car right in half. And thank God that guy was okay. The 48-year-old driver was rushed to the hospital. But you know what? He survived. And that is saying something.
Oh man. Thank God. Because that could have turned out real different. So lucky. All right, Paula, thank you for that. Don't go anywhere though. Because speaking of cars, even if you don't love cars, it is hard to resist a free Bentley. And if you've got the stomach for it, one can be yours right now. I'm sorry, you're not a Bentley fan? Oh, okay. How about a free Porsche or a free Lamborghini? The skills, the tools, and the level of risk it requires to claim one of these beauties for yourself. Straight ahead. Back now with our senior story editor, Paula Froelich. She's out of control tonight. Okay, the sticker price for a 2021 Porsche 911 Turbo is, you know, north of $200,000. But tell our viewers how they can get their own Porsche absolutely free of charge tonight.
All right, Ashley. Well, the Porsche might be free, but it's a BYOB situation, which is a bring your own boat and possibly some other tools. So here's the deal. Right now, thousands of luxury cars are just floating adrift at sea right now on a 656-foot cargo ship that's on fire off the coast of Portugal. So this guy, this boat, it was headed from Germany to Rhode Island, packed with Porsches, Lamborghinis, Audis, Volkswagens, and Bentleys, and a fire broke out in the cargo hold. So the crew abandoned ship, and this is a fun fact we found out here. According to maritime law, if a ship is abandoned, whoever gets on that boat first is finder's keepers. So, you know,
so
I'm just saying.
Those cars.
We all got a new weekend activity coming up for us.
There's 4,000 cars on that cargo ship. I know that they're sending people out there, but it's, you know, if everybody's off the ship, it's just floating and on fire. And who knows what the condition of the cars
they ain't
is like
there
at this
yet.
Point, but the fire's in the front.
All right, exactly.
Well, Paula, thank
they're
you
not
for
there
all
yet.
That.
And those cars.
Right. There's still a shot, right? Okay, while we await the fate of the 4,000 vehicles, we do have another car story for you. Demand for Tesla electric cars is through the roof, but there may be some trouble in paradise when it comes to the self-driving version. We've got an investigation for you Monday night, 10 Eastern. Hope you'll join us and have yourself a great weekend till then.